mouth.
Word of 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 mouth.
Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Forgery in the art industry is not rare, but a con artist who has been caught and never sent to jail is. Meet Mark Landis. For more than 30 years, he's been imitating works of art that range from Picasso's to Mary Cassatt's to Dr. Seuss and donating them to more than 46 museums in 20 states. The documentary, Art and Craft, gives us a glimpse of Landis, the mischievous shut-in and skilled artist who played the role of philanthropist and the curator who is bent on stopping him. Jennifer Grossman and Sam Coleman directed the film, and it's making its television debut on PBS's POV series this Friday. Jennifer and Sam, it's so nice to have you with us. Welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
So how would you describe Mark Landis?
Mark is not like anyone I've ever met before. And, you know, when we first read the article in the Times that sort of inspired us to make the film, we didn't know what to expect. You know, then spent some time on the phone with Mark and met him in person. And he was not like what you would imagine an art forger running from the law might be. You know, he was charming and funny and constantly referencing old movies and television shows. And he's pretty wonderful. So,
but let's talk a little bit about his technique. Now, you follow him to Hobby Lobby and Kinko's, where he gets his supplies. Now, here is Mark Landis from the film talking about his techniques that have duped museum curators across the country.
Put it in one of those Walmart frames. Looks like $1 million. It does look like $1 million because actually that's worth about $1 million. Maybe not quite that much, but close. And these frames are so cheap, and all you have to do is just go over them some with arts and crafts stuff, and they look really good. Don't you think that looks good?
So that's a clip from Art and Craft that we're speaking with the filmmakers Jennifer Grossman and Sam Coleman about the art forger Mark Landis. It sounds like he's playing us a little. I mean, or is he a little proud of himself? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely some pride there. It's, you know, Mark... As we got to know him more, you know, I think one of the things you realize about him is that there's this incredible mischievousness. It's not a maliciousness, but it is a mischievousness. And I think he took pride and enjoyment out of putting one over on folks with materials that, you know, are so common and so cheap. And he is unusual for so many different reasons. But this in particular, I think, is incredibly unusual for an art forger to not obsess about the materials and the means of production. You know, he was using cheap stuff because for Mark, it wasn't really about having, the pieces have any sort of longevity in people's homes or the sale or any of these things. He was giving them away really for that moment of that interaction. So he could get in there, have that interaction with people and get away. And after that, he really didn't care. So, you know, if there was scrutiny afterwards to find the pigments were fluorescing under a blue light because they actually weren't period specific or whatever, it didn't matter to him.
And that's why he isn't in jail, is that correct? Because he never asked for money for these. He just gave them away.
Yeah. He didn't ask for money. He never took a tax write-off. This wasn't a planned intent to avoid the law. It just was, you know, it wasn't his interest.
Well, Mark Landis' father was a military officer. His family traveled a lot. He's pretty much obsessed with his mother and very much a product of the media age. Jennifer, you mentioned him always doing quotes from films. And in the film, we see the TV is always playing in the background. He's got loads of movie quotes. And you played on that with film clips throughout your film. How does this kind of illuminate his character? How did you use those?
As we began spending more time with Mark and then began watching the footage with co-director and editor Mark Becker, it became clear that Mark Landis's sort of whole world reference, you know, came through these old movies and television shows. It's such an important part of his life. And so we felt like it really should infuse the film as well. And, you know, the TV is constantly on. It still is. You know, if we call him on the phone, he has to turn the TV down. And so I think using these clips were just a wonderful way to get into his head.
Well, Mark Landis had been diagnosed, he tells you early in the film, that he was hospitalized as early as age 17 and a long history of mental illness. Now, here he is reading his diagnosis. This is from a psych ward.
Schizophrenic, paranoid, and psychotic disorders. I got that. Personality disorders. I got that. catatonic or other grossly disorganized behavior. I guess I've got that too. It says I've got it. Incoherence. Well, wait a minute. I didn't mean to laugh. That's awful. Oddities of thought, perception, speech, and behavior. Oh, no, I don't have that.
So he knows himself to a degree. Do you think that this art forgery was designed as a way for him to cope with his mental illness?
I mean, I think certainly, you know, he taught himself to draw at an early age when he was a young child, and copying images out of catalogs from museums was a way for him to entertain himself when he was alone at night, and it was something he had a really good facility for. So within that background, you know, I think he really finds copying to be soothing, and he also, I think the art is both therapeutic and then it's a means to an end in terms of, you know, getting to meet people through it.
Well, there is also this sense of humor. You know, there's an incredibly, as you said, he's charming, he's likable. There's a kind of gentleness to him and a lot of sympathy that I felt a lot of sympathy for him and then thought, well, you know, it's not a victimless crime to donate art to museums, passing them off as real. But there is a part of me that thinks, well, those curators, you know, they didn't know. I mean, we see in the film, you could have done something as easy as pulling up a blue light. But as we hear in the film from one curator,
he brought up very quickly was that there were more paintings and possible endowments from the family's estate. He knew right where to hit us. Our soft spot, art and money.
He's lying to people, right? You know, in this case, one museum curator, they're all across the country that have been completely taken. And he knows how to hit them, that soft spot, art and money, which is exactly what a con artist does. But he presents his intentions as really pure. What do you think? Are his intentions pure?
Pure is a sort of a difficult word. I think there's a purity in anyone's intent as long as there is sort of no self-delusion. I think Mark is aware of how, at times, this ruse that he perpetrated was delusional. In other words, he talks openly in the film and in person as a human being that he would get carried away in this act. You know, I think he understands that what he did wasn't above board or necessarily right, but he sort of sees it as sort of harmless mischief and the kind of thing that for him gave him meaning, and so therefore this was his way in and his way to communicate with people. And but certainly he does not see it the same way that, say, Matthew Leininger did, the person that, you know, discovered the ruse and sort of continued to track the case. You know, Matthew sees this as, you know, fully a wrong deed. You know, Mark sees it in more gray.
Well, and in the film, you present there, you know, Matthew Leininger is his kind of Javert, you know, chasing him down. He discovers the ruse, relentlessly trying to stop him. And you play these two off each other with this kind of noirish caper music, you know, revealing their shared obsessive qualities. So are you asking viewers to question here, you know, who is the good guy? Who's the bad guy?
I think what we wanted to do is start with ideas of people that, you know, face value maybe, and then deepen them as the course of the movie went on. And certainly this isn't a movie where we like to tell people what to think. And, you know, we've gotten reactions from one end of the spectrum to the other in terms of, you know, who thinks who is the villain and the good guy and who gets what out of the film. And some people find it hilarious and other people find it touching. That's been gratifying in that I think the work that Sam and Mark Becker and I put into crafting the film, you know, has allowed for people to question things that they might not necessarily question.
I'm curious, which one of them did you meet first? And did they know that you were in contact with the other?
We got in touch with Matt first. He was a lot easier to find. And we had a great interview with him. And then after that, you know, we realized there was definitely a story here. And so we got in touch with Mark, and they did know that we were in touch with each other and filming with each other.
Well, this is all sort of building up to a meeting between the two of them. There's an exhibition of Mark's work. It's curated by Aaron Cowan at the University of Cincinnati, where they do meet. Now, did you know they were going to meet when you first started filming?
No, we didn't. But interestingly enough, as Jennifer said, Matthew was our first interview and first, you know, moment of filming for this project. And in the interview is a line that he says, he told us that he had this dream that he would put together an exhibition of Mark Landis's known forgeries and invite the world to come see them and invite Mark as the guest of honor. And he sort of laughs. And, you know, we sort of stored that in the back of our minds thinking like, wow, that would be amazing if that ever really were to happen. But, you know, we weren't thinking that it would. And, you know, spent the majority of the next year filming with Mark and keeping in touch with Matt. And then suddenly it all came together. Matt became reintroduced to Aaron. They had known each other, worked together previously, and together worked to set up the show. And it happened super fast. And thankfully, because we had already, you know, been introduced to Matt and stayed in touch, we were able to film it.
It must be very hard not to have a kind of expectation of what that scene is going to look like when they meet.
As a filmmaker and a human being,
I think,
you know.
Yes.
I mean, geez, we, you know, there was this moment right beforehand where, you know, it's in the film and we're, you know, hanging out with Mark before he goes to this exhibition. And, you know, our hearts were in our throats as well because, and his was obviously way more because this was Mark's life. But, you know, the expectation was that he was going to be hung, you know, that this was going to be a public hanging in a sort of potential, like, you know, embarrassment for him. And things turned out somewhat differently, and maybe we should just leave it at that.
Well, he does. He has a tremendous anxiety beforehand. It really looks like a panic attack. And I wondered if during all the time that you spent with him, did you witness other, maybe less pivotal displays of his illness that maybe you decided not to include? I mean, you spent a lot of time in the film, I think, helping us relate to him and understand him.
I mean, I think, you know, certainly the time we were shooting with Mark, his health was sort of up and down, both and not just his mental health, but his, you know, he wasn't taking such great care of himself. And so we were actually, you know, we were concerned about him and were in touch with Donna, who's in the film, his former caseworker. And, you know, it was interesting because after, you know, this build up to the exhibition, he sort of had this new lease on life. And even since the film, he's really come out of his shell in this way that we never anticipated and has been a lovely surprise, I think, for everyone involved, and that he's really enjoyed the film and the film's reception and talking about the film and traveling with it and getting to meet people all over the country. And so that's been sort of a wonderful byproduct that we didn't expect.
And he's doing his own work. It looks like, I'm looking at his website right now, you can commission original works, have him copy a photo or a painting of maybe a family member or something like that. So he's signing his own work.
He is signing his own work now. And he's able to communicate with people online through their orders and through sort of comment boxes. And I think it's been really wonderful for him.
That's so ironic that people will want, you know, I want to have a Mark Landis of my own.
Yeah, that's why it's called MarkLandisOriginal.com.
Well, since the film has come out, both of you and Mark Landis have been on several panels. I know that you, with Colette Lull, presented the film for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and used him as an example of someone managing his mental illness through his artwork. Did you, when you started making this film, think that it would turn into a film about mental illness on some level?
When we first heard about the story, there was no mention of Mark's mental illness. And so, you know, we went in intrigued by the premise of an art forger who's giving away his fakes and wondering why on earth he would do that. And then, you know, once we met Mark and understood his diagnosis a bit and sort of his history, certainly we knew that mental illness was going to be a part of the film, and figuring out how to structure that within the sort of art heist story was something that Sam and Mark Becker and I spent a lot of time debating in the edit room. And we wanted the film to show the Mark Landis that we got to know over several years, which is, you know, not someone who's mentally ill, but he's his own person who happens to have mental illness. And I think that was important for us to convey and has seemed to touch people in the same way that we intended, which has been great.
Well, Jennifer and Sam, congratulations, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you
for having us.
Jennifer Grossman and Sam Cullman directed the film Art and Craft. It dives into the life of the art forger Mark Landis. And it's making its television debut on PBS's POV series this Friday and will be available online for a month after the premiere. More information at wordofmouthradio.org.